Okay. Welcome to the Futile Podcast. That's the name of the podcast I do, because there's new people here today, sort of. Tonight, we're going to talk about Ghostbusters. I always say tonight, because as far as I'm concerned, you usually do these at night, and I don't care when people listen to them. They could be listening to them on a bus on a Tuesday afternoon 6 months from now in Omaha. I don't care.
It's never night in Omaha.
It's never night in Omaha. Oh, that's there you go.
I feel like it's night. They're comforted.
It sounds like a dime novel there. You know, you just sit there hammering. I have to write it on a typewriter with like a... So, we're going to talk about Ghostbusters from 1984, the original. We just watched it on Blu-ray. I thought it looked pretty good. I thought it moved pretty quick. Surprisingly quick. Almost too quick in some places, but very well paced at the same time. Yeah. For an 80s movie, the plot is pretty simple. You got these academics, different kind of action heroes, action comedy heroes. They're not straight up goofballs, but they are pretty goofy guys. They're all dealing with the paranormal sciences, you know, all that stuff that was getting big in the 80s when Unsolved Mysteries was coming about and all those shows and Alien Autopsies and Roswell and all that stuff. So they kind of predate that by a little. So those guys get kicked out of the university, and then they have to basically get blue-collar jobs being Ghostbusters. They invent their own career, and they pretty quickly go from being academics to being, you know, like plumbers or something. And that's kind of the joke, I think, about it, is that it's like they put on jumpsuits, and they go get dirty and gungy, and they have cigarettes hanging out of their mouth, and they're exhausted because they're overworked all the time, and terrible hours and everything else. And that was something I really appreciated this time when I watched it. I mean, good movies are good, but you get different things out of them each time, I think. And this time I finally sort of got that. Like, it's interesting that you know, these academics at the beginning, but at some point they pretty clearly transition into the, like, the blue-collar, like, yeah, this is our job mentality.
Start
yeah.
You're talking about the smoking cigarettes. Yeah. Did you notice that every time Dan Aykroyd had a cigarette, he always looked miserable?
Uh-huh.
That was just, it was like drooping out of his mouth. It's just like, oh, I don't like this at all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And now he's a smoker.
Yeah, well, he probably was then, too. I don't know. A lot of people probably were. It was the 80s. It was, like you said, it was like casual smoking. It doesn't make him a bad guy. It doesn't make him like a hard guy. It just makes him, he's just a guy that smokes. And
I don't know if it was that I know that there was like cigarette product placement back in that time, but it seemed so like painfully obvious that nobody in that movie really smoked. It was just there for the money.
I don't know.
Just like that Nestle's Crunch?
They look cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the Budweiser. Or the two kinds of Cokes that were in the possessed fridge.
Uh-huh.
There was Coke Classic and the new Coke, which I got a kick out of.
And the Oscar Mayer salami.
Yeah.
That was pretty good, too.
I really don't have a huge problem with product placement when they work it into the natural environment. I mean, we could do that here, you know? People are drinking this soda.
Does it seem natural, though, when, like, a scene pauses for a second for everybody to light up?
No.
That happened like a couple times.
I don't know about that, but yeah, no, it's more just like it's natural that when they're sitting together having Chinese food and they've got beer that they've got Budweiser instead of beer brand beer, you know? Like things like that definitely draw you out of a movie, you know? I enjoy it again, and I haven't seen the movie in a couple of years, and it's the sort of movie that I like to own because every 5 years, I'm going to feel like watching it. And it's one you can watch with a bunch of people and kind of talk over it in places and kind of make fun of it, but still enjoy it. There's a rare collection of movies like that. I'm usually pretty precious about the movies I actually like, you know? Like, I'm not going to bring Heat over here and watch it with a bunch of other people that are, like, talking over it and stuff. Like, shut the fuck up! You don't get the duality of man that Al Pacino and Robert De Niro represents right here. I know they're sitting there at a coffee shop. You don't understand. So yeah, so I'm not going to do that, but for Ghostbusters, yeah, it's fine to be like, there's the Dewey Decimal System getting spewed everywhere. I wouldn't want to clean those cards up.
Oh no.
Never. But yeah, I mean, like, does anybody else have any good stories, Ghostbuster stuff, or takes on a movie?
All I want to point out is the amazing amount of grain in the movie.
Yeah.
That didn't work for me. Even that it was, like, obvious that it was shot on film, it was so inconsistent between shots.
Yeah.
Even in scenes. It just seemed like a bad transfer or something. It's something
I'm
not used to seeing.
It's pretty cheap on Blu-ray now. And I don't know if that's just because it's such a bare-bones version or if it is a bad transfer or well, I thought it looked pretty good. Like I said, there was that part where the gum fell out of that one guy's mouth when he was getting shocked.
Yeah, the resolution was great. It was sharp. It was good. Yeah.
But you do run into that. You run into that, like, well, it's only can be as good as it was shot on film to be. And so
maybe they used an ASA too high or something.
If there's, you know, they thought they could push it here or there, and, you know, that happens with things. I'm just in reading reviews for Blu-rays, I see that all the time. You know, it's like, this is as good, and this is soft, but that's probably how it looked when they shot on film. So that's the way that it is, you know? You can't magically make it better than the cinematography, so... But that said, I thought that a lot of times comedies get, like, no one does the work to make them look good, you know? So it's always nice, especially at a movie like this, where I think they at least do the work to shoot, like a you know, a good-looking movie. Yeah, so anybody else's impressions? Impressions about Ghostbusters. That's what we're doing this for. Their take on.
One thing I kind of like about those older 80 movies is their graphics weren't really that awesome. But they're kind of cool, and they're cheesy, sort of. They're coming out with new stuff. But what I really like are the sets. They really go the extra mile with their sets and their costumes and stuff, and you don't really see that anymore. Except for occasionally, like, in a movie that the movie ends up sucking, like, really hard. Like, the last Narnia movie. The ship was totally awesome, but the movie really sucked ass, and there were tons of, like, amazing graphics.
Pre-computer animation.
Like, totally sucked, and, like, this was, like, acting, which, you know, it was 80s comedy, not that great, but, like, the costumes and the sets, that stuff is awesome. They did a great job with it. So, I don't know. I just feel like it's a little give and take.
I totally agree that the set thing is a big deal. Bouncing light off real objects is the thing I always go back to, as opposed to visual effects, where you can do a lot and it can look pretty believable to a to a point, to a far at certain things, and it's a cheaper solution in a lot of ways. But you can't go wrong with, you know, building it and having it actually there for somebody to interact with. I just watched or rewatched with the commentary Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, which is kind of an okay movie, but. Something about it is, like, it's got all these cool things in it I would really want to like. It's got, like, airships and giant robots and, like, it's fun, adventure-y stuff. But for some reason, it just fell very flat to me when I watched it. And I'm listening to the commentary, and it's mostly just the effects guys just repeatedly saying, there was just one person there in a blue room. That's how we did this. They're holding the steering wheel, and that's it. And it sounds like, to the point of almost ridiculousness, they even shot, like the actors apart. When they're even in the same scene. So it's like, Giovanni Ribisi was, like, never actually in the same room as Jude Law. It's like, that seems unnecessary. It's invariably going to affect the quality of
the
performance.
What do the actors have to work off of?
Yeah, I mean, they do a good job, you know, pretending, which actors should do, but yeah.
To be fair, they literally cannot be in the same room at the same time.
Yeah.
they just start going at it.
Really?
Yeah. You've heard. Yeah. No, it's a good way to solve that problem. Isn't it? No ego problems. You're the star for the day. But, build the sets and do the practical effect work is always good.
Just to sit on your lap.
I just watched John Carpenter's The Thing again on Blu-ray.
That's
and
the
special effects in that movie are awesome because it's all, like, built stuff. I mean, it was, you know, 20 plus years old, 30 years old at this point, and yet... It doesn't age as badly as, like, the, you know, bad visual effects. It's like when we watched the first Ninja Turtles movie. All the turtle, you know, animatronics and everything, like, still looks really good on Blu-ray. And you're right, there are visual effects in this that have a certain kind of 80s charm, because I think they're not trying too hard to look realistic, because it's all so far-fetched.
Slimer especially looked really good.
Yeah, Slimer still looks good. It's like, what would it go? That's a cartoony ghost thing, so it looks like a cartoony ghost
thing. But some of the, like, puppet work and things like that really look good.
Yeah, the puppet stuff is almost
always the cheap, like, early 90s. gross computer animation.
Yeah, that's definitely
that does not hold up at all.
No. And it takes you right out of the movie when you get that. And that's a tough call with that. I mean, in terms of storytelling, which I'm always looking at now as I'm trying to do more writing, everything sort of has justification within the world. You get that these guys have a background in this stuff, so they come from a scientific place, which is a cool place for science fiction and horror movies. You always have to have, like, the skeptic or the scientist to sort of understand and tackle and deal with. And usually you have some, you know, gruff dude that's the leader, that's the main protagonist of the story. But in this case, you have these the kind of schlubby, regular, normal guys that are these academics. And so, you know, you justifiably get them fired from their jobs because what they're doing doesn't make any sense. And then you create the chaos of the Ghostbuster thing. And then you try to make it all work in a believable enough world that even though it's a comedy, the comedy isn't just this, like, throwaway absurdity. It's all the humor comes from, like, the situations that they're in and everything, such that you never completely, like, write off the story necessarily. It's not like it's comedy at the cost of story for the purposes of like a non sequitur or anything, which I like. I like that it's just they thought, well, okay, she sees the commercial that we made, and that's how she knows about us, and then she goes to find us, and everything happens for a reason. You're not left scratching your head. I mean, the only time I would ever scratch my head in this movie, I think, is so they get put in jail, but then they ask for the blueprints to that building and they bring them the blueprints while they're in jail. That might be the only time where I'm like, huh? Like, but everything else makes sense.
They can't get a phone call, but they'll get
blueprints. Yeah, they'll get the blueprints.
Seems pretty
extreme. And like the whole thing with the mayor and stuff, it's like these are problems you would encounter if you're writing a story like this. And sometimes there's a tendency to just like, well, no, we don't need to solve this. We'll just throw in a lot more explosions and stuff. And that generally makes for a crappier movie because, like, yeah, they didn't try to take this seriously, you know?
This is way, way off topic, but did you guys ever see, I can't remember the name of the movie, the dancing movie? You Got Served.
No, I haven't seen that.
Throughout the entire movie, there's this gangster guy named Emerald, and he's threatening them. Emerald, yeah.
That's so gangster.
And at the very end, when they go to the competition, it's like, oh man, I'm still worried about Emerald. And then he just goes, oh, don't worry about Emerald. I took care of him. And that's it. The whole thread of the movie is just completely gone. And then they have a dance competition.
Yeah, that's bad writing.
And it's awesome.
Well, but a movie like that's the problem with these things, like these singing competition shows and stuff. I don't have a problem with that stuff; it has its place. But it starts taking everything over. You know, it's like, sure, if it's a dance movie and everyone dances and that's what the point of the movie is to see this really nice choreography and maybe these really cool sets or whatever else, that's fine. But you try to put this. But if it doesn't have a good story, then you have to at least fairly say, you know, it's a shitty story. And that's why it's always nice. So, like, you get this movie, it's reasonably well shot, and it's got good comedic performances. You talked about the acting in it, and I agree. The acting is actually pretty good because these guys are all pretty competent, both comedic writers and comedic actors. Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis and Bill Murray, they all are working on this kind of very deadpan play. I mean, Bill Murray gets the biggest lines, but Harold Ramis might have some of the more subtle, funnier lines. Because when you think about everything he's saying, he says so straight, but it's so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, I don't think he's human, you know? You're a humanitarian. You know? It's so based on this rational approach.
I mean, the two most memorable lines of the movie, that's a big Twinkie and...
Yeah,
you know, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes. They're both him.
Ernie Hudson. Yeah. Those are Ernie Hudson. Yeah.
And in the second movie, there's some line about like straining a slinky as a child.
Yeah, right,
that's
right.
That's
like
the line I remember from the second
about
movie.
About
that's from
yeah,
it's great.
It is.
Love
the second one is good. The characters are good. It just. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to over nostalgify, which isn't a word, but it should be, or maybe it will be. Things, but it seems like they don't really do that work necessarily in the newer movies. They don't do the work of having like characters that have like enough background or the justification and all the points for their storyline that gets them moving from A to B to C and in a quick way. I don't know what a new version of this movie would be like. Or, well, for one, the thing that they don't do now is everyone has to be like a goddamn supermodel these days. You know, like those guys are, like I said, they're schlubby, regular looking academic guys. You know, like, you know, balding and a little overweight and everything else. They look like regular dudes as opposed to them all just being like the three underwear models. You know, that are put together to can act kind of, and then they're the ones you throw the material to. Though, I don't know, I've heard they've been working on a third one with, like, Seth Rogen and all of his guys, so...
Really?
Yeah, it might be a new kind of thing. And I could see that maybe working. I could see that kind of comedy fitting in there if they don't rely too much on, like, the stoner tropes and things like that too heavily. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. But generally, we try to give things ratings on this because... And I usually use it out of a 5-star system because that's totally cheating. Because it's just, like, not rating a movie if you use a 5-star system, because you can give things, like, half stars and things. And yeah, for me...
What's not cheating?
Not cheating would be something like 4 is not cheating, in my opinion. The thing about the 5-star system is that that gives you, like, an upper half or whole star for something that's, like, unbelievably good. And so I can give something like Ghostbusters a 4 stars, and I'm admitting there's nothing perfect about it, but I don't have to sit there and like enumerate 7 or 8 things. I can just say, yeah, it's a 4 star, 4 out of 5. It's not a perfect movie. It's cheating because I'm not saying Ghostbusters is a perfect movie, but I'm saying it's pretty close. And then at the same time, I can look at movies that I think are better than that. You know, the rating system for movies like that is still pretty stupid. For what it's trying to do, it's damn near a perfect movie. There are a few moments where like you could hyper-analyze it and see missteps. I think it's a little slow to start. How long does it take before you see Venkman and those guys? It takes a few minutes because you see the whole thing with the librarian first, right? And that scene goes on a little longer than it needs to. It just plays this creep factor of her like walking through things and little things happen. And maybe you don't even need that scene to start the movie. I don't know. There's very few little things like that here and there. They kind of create this tension for Dana's situation when she opens the fridge and that crazy stuff happens. And then what is it, like weeks later that like things are okay? It's like, I'm sorry, but if that happened, then that should have happened like a day before everything really happens there. So, I mean, I use the 5-star system because I'm such a contrarian that I can find... Like, if everybody else here was just talking about how much they loved it, I could do the thing where I could be like that. Well, there's also this and this, yeah. Which I think is good because you set up a nice dialectic about discussing art, and that's the whole point. Zach gets really mad at me. He doesn't like that I don't just agree with him about everything, but that makes for a really lame discussion. It's generally better when people have things they like or don't like.
Quite.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that was awesome when that happened, and that happened. Like, yeah, it was, dude. Boom. It'd be the bro-cast then. Yeah. But no, there's none of that. But yeah, so I think a 4 out of 5 is a good place for Ghostbusters, because it spawned a sequel that I think is just as good. It was a case of some creative comedians writing something that was different, something that was offbeat. I don't think there had been too many horror comedy action movies like that. They got to play on those other little elements of, you know, like the whole blue collar thing. I think, I don't know, for some reason that's just really struck me this time watching it, just the whole like aspect of them just like cigarettes hanging out of their mouth. The discussion that Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson have when they're working late that night and they're just driving in the car and they're just talking about
so
stuff.
Filthy too.
Yeah.
So dirty.
They're so just beat up and tired.
Crap.
Yeah. They're just done. And that's like a good bit of extra stuff to it that I like. I mean, it didn't have to have that, but it did, and then that added more to it.
I just kept thinking, they must smell terrible. It must have been terrible on set with them. They must have actually been really dirty. That's what I thought. Like
they method acted that whole thing, yeah.
Yeah.
We really were driving out all night before this. You were supposed to be driving out all night.
Yeah, drinking a 6-pack or a 12-pack out of the bottom of the scene. Just like bottom of the car.
Keeping in the bottom.
Pretty sure like he was drinking a beer and like snuck it down there at the end.
Definitely.
It was just they were nitty gritty. Gross.
Anybody else got a star?
I'll give it a 3.
3 out of 5?
Yeah. I noticed that the lighting was really flat throughout.
A lot of places.
Yeah. Which I didn't appreciate.
Not as much popping cinematography for you. Yeah. I thought the compositions were mostly pretty good, though. And they were shooting real location stuff. Like, they actually, like you mentioned, like, oh, we've been there in New York and stuff. Could be because it was easier to shoot in New York in the 80s. I don't know how they are with permits and stuff. I know San Francisco's gotten pretty bad, but... So that's nice. It does... You have a sense of feeling like they're in a real city and not just a series of sets, even though the sets are nice when they are in sets. So, yeah. Okay. Is that ready? You got a good out of 5?
I think 4. 4 is good. Nice. I can watch this movie every time and still be entertained. And that's important.
That is important. That's the most important thing, actually.
Yeah, it keeps my attention. And I grew up, I remember owning this movie when I was, little. So I've, seen it since I was, 4, since I can remember. So and it's still good. It's a good movie.
Definitely.
4 stars.
4. T-Dog, I'm going to start calling you that for the podcast.
Please.
Only on the podcast.
No, call me that all the time.
All the time, all yeah. Day.
Approach me on the street.
Yeah. T-Dog, how you doing? I shot a kid.
We're familiar like that. We can talk.
Yeah, right.
I want to give it a 3. I really like it, but a lot of it...
Oh, I forget to tell. You can do half stars, so if you want to give it a 3.5...
Then yes, I would like to give it a 3.5.
Half is where I generally... A 3?
Yeah, 3.5.
Oh, okay.
I stick with 3.
Yeah, okay, thank you, Matt.
Because I'm not a jerk like Matt.
3.
But, I mean, it's so fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I could just watch that over and over again. But, I mean, a lot of stuff is just, especially on Blu-ray, it's just glaring. There's that scene toward the end where, there's lightning striking the tower.
Yeah.
And there's, 3 different sections of the tower.
Yeah.
And then they're just cut out.
Yeah, you can see the
and
mass.
And they're moving a little bit, and it's just
I can see
oh,
the visual effects are
yeah.
problematic in places, yeah.
I mean, it's cool that they made that work in the first place. It must have been amazing just to see that, I don't know what you call that, low definition? It's not standard.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes me scared to see something like Blade Runner on Blu-ray. Oh, I hope it looks good still.
Yeah, actually,
I heard that.
Pretty
well,
good.
I'm going to be so drunk when I watch it, it won't matter. I'll be this
You haven't seen it yet?
No,
didn't you buy it a long time ago?
I bought it a long time
ago. Okay.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. Like that and Heat
and
stuff.
I used to, after parties, go home and put that movie in and eat a big bowl of soup and pass out totally just
listening to the band.
Yeah, it was my go-to movie.
Oh my god,
Pavlov in
there. You should marry this girl, Tyler. She's a winner.
I don't know. I just like
that's a thing to do.
I don't know. It's just what I did, and that and The Fifth Element. But
yeah, that's another good one. We got that on the Blu-ray too.
Yeah.
She tolerates watching. Oh crap, Martin Lawrence movies too. So that's pretty awesome.
There you go.
Because he puts his face in the shit.
He does put his face in the shit
all the time. Tyler gives it a 3.5 because of the poor visual effects, because they can't go take a time machine into the future and make do better ones, but they did as best as they could.
Okay. It brings me out of it. I'm
sorry. Yeah, no, you're right.
It's super fun, but I just I keep getting just distracted.
Same here. It, that beginning scene with the gargoyle on the roof, and you can see the car driving through it. It bugs me.
It's the sort of movie that could almost do with like a very reasonably cheap special edition type thing. Don't add do-backs in the background or anything, but fix up some of the matte lines. Just remove some matte lines and you'd be good.
I like if you call them do-backs.
That's what they're called, right?
Really?
The things in Star Wars that they added in the Tatooine desert.
The sand people.
When the sand people weren't called do-backs. Those are called what are they called? Oh, Tusken Raiders.
Yeah.
The Tusken Raiders. I used to have the Star Wars collectible card game, so they were the giant lizard things.
Those are
lizards?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a derogatory term for the sand.
No. The sand people is the derogatory term for the Tusken Raiders. Sand people travel single file to hide their numbers.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's just heap the derogatory to derogatory.
Yes, yes. Those all come out in Blu-ray pretty soon, too, the Star Wars movies. That'll be cool.
Yeah, but they're going to come out in full screen.
Are they?
Yeah.
Wait,
what?
I haven't heard this yet.
For Blu-ray?
I haven't heard that at all.
HD full screen
doesn't make
any sense.
I haven't heard that.
And it's going to be the special editions with all that.
Well, I've heard that. I've heard
that.
Well,
that sounds like a waste of money and time.
I've heard that it's the special editions for the old ones. That's just whatever. You have to learn to live with that, I guess. I've still got the old ones on VHS in full screen, but hadn't heard that they were going to do the aspect rate. That doesn't sound right. That sounds. Did you read that somewhere in a spec? Yeah,
that could be wrong.
That sounds wrong.
I'm hoping you pulled that out of your ass.
Well, I was reading reviews on Amazon. You know, the reviews they post before the product comes out.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone could do that. So. Yeah. No, it's like $90 for the whole thing on Blu-ray, which I made a point not to buy any of them until I could get all six at once and be like, I'll just have all six, good and bad and indifferent and whatever. There should be a little slot in between 2 and 3 for all the Clone Wars episodes. But
talking about the J.D. Tartakovsky.
Yeah, the ones the ones that crawl actually matter because Grievous is like huffing and puffing at the beginning of episode 3 because of what happens in the Clone Wars. Yeah, and that's cool. It matters. It's subtle, but it matters to those that care. That was a good
the cartoon.
Yeah, the cartoons are awesome.
That's how Star Wars should have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. That guy should just do more stuff.
Yeah, he should just do more stuff in general. Yeah.
His other show, Symbiotic Titan, I think just got canceled. Yeah. Which is lame. But I think it's okay because he should be doing something more cool than that instead of just the mission statement of Cartoon Network, do shows about kids in high school because kids in high school want to see cartoons about kids in high school. It's like, hey, remember Batman the Animated Series? There was no kids in high school in that. There was like guys dressed like they were in the 40s shooting guns at each other, talking about how disturbed they were from childhood problems and things, and kids loved it because kids will like follow cool stuff. And that show was big. That show won Emmys.
That was a good show.
Everybody loves that show. Anyway. That's a close to this one.